Hey, welcome to the show. Very excited for this week. We're actually going to do it. We're going to talk about sex. We've got author
actually going to go there.
Huh?
We're actually going to go there.
Yeah, we're going to go there. We never do it. We've got Mark Manson on the show, and we're going to talk about sex.
This is The Gender Knot. I am Naz.
I am Dan. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good.
You never like to talk about sex on the show.
So you start off with Mark, and everyone's gonna hear this being like, we don't talk about sex, and that's because Naz is Middle Eastern and her family objects. And I just want to make clear, no one's ever said anything to me. I'm just like one of these bicultural kids where like there are a range of topics that are very sensitive that you're like, okay, I'm gonna like not publicly put this out there. So I just want to make clear, no one has ever commented in my family about anything that I talk about. I just want to defend them a little bit.
Isn't that how you know they object? Because they won't even talk to you about it.
You said to me that your
they
parents
just, you walk over to their house and they go, we have no daughter.
Dude, you told me your parents don't pay any attention to anything you do. And no, you followed that up with, it's great. So
I got knuckle tattoos and then I had dinner with them and they didn't even bring it up.
Do you think they noticed?
How could they not have?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so I really want to just defend my family there before Dan's like, we don't talk about sex because Naz's Middle Eastern family objects. It's a bit more complicated. I also have another reason. In the next couple of years, I'm probably going to want to write a book about the economy. So I'm being a bit careful about like what tapes are floating about on the internet.
Oh, come on. Economists get down.
Yeah, I know. But I don't know if like, I don't know if Paul Krugman had tapes of him giggling about stuff, if I'd take him that seriously.
I don't even know who that is.
He's one of my heroes. One of my nerdy heroes. So cool, we've got Dan and Mark Manson coming up. First, let's do a tiny bit of housekeeping. So I want to plug a show that's coming up in London. Kasia Urbaniak, she is wicked. She's been on The Gender Knot before. She is the woman's power coach that you will have heard last season. Former dominatrix, former Taoist nun. So she is giving a masterclass at the School of Life in London. And it's about how to speak power. It's all about understanding verbal power dynamics. Here is a reminder of Kasia and how awesome she is.
When you start to speak, it does not sound eloquent, elegant. It's not calibrated. It does not take the listening of the man into consideration. And it doesn't have to, because when something's been festering in a closet for ages, when we're trying to reinvent our lives and we're doing something we've never done before, it comes out fucking clumsy and sloppy and full of extra rage. You talk to one man about something he did, and every single man that's ever done the same exact thing to you in the past, all of that force is behind it. That opening is, it's an opening, but everything comes out. The gold, the gore, all of it. The love, the hate, it's confused. And it needs to be, because if we waited for it to be well organized and understood internally, and we started by ourselves in isolation, talking about how do we now bring men up to speed with a new reality that we're trying to create and propose something that's visionary and beautiful that they can participate in, we'd never get anywhere, because isolation is one of the main problems to begin with.
Okay, so she's going to be at the School of Life in London on the 22nd of June. We've linked to it in the notes of the show. Totally turn up. I'm going to be there, probably in the front row. So come say hi. Should be a wicked afternoon.
Should I come? I'll try to come. Anyway, write to us as well, thegendernot@gmail.com, or you can go to thegendernot.com and fill out a contact form. You can also sign up for our newsletter, which is very exciting stuff.
Cool. And so you had a chat with Mark Manson. You had a massive chat with Mark Manson.
Yeah.
We're gonna put it out in a few installments, because you talked about lots of stuff, which was wicked.
Yeah. And today, we're talking about sex, you know, because I had him here and
Wait, is that relevant? Is damn relevant to talking about sex, the fact that he was in your house.
Well, he just, I know that he, you know, he's got a lot of opinions on a lot of things, and you and I don't talk about sex very much on the show, so I had this guy in my house who I know has some opinions, and I was like, you know what, let's do it. Let's have a sex episode. And so we talked a little bit about pornography, and how that, in his opinion, and probably in mine as well, is kind of like actually harming people's sex lives.
Yeah, I feel like this is a really complicated one. I just really want to flag something up, because when you and Mark were talking, you talked a little bit about whether there's evidence if porn encourages sexual deviance or not. I just want to quickly flag up that is quite a complicated area, and there's so much conflicting evidence. And like, if you speak to, especially, I've spoken to so many youth workers who work with teens, and the stories you hear from them in terms of like how like easy access to porn, it's affecting teenagers' expectations, especially expectations on teenage girls. So I do really want to flag that up. I think it's just quite a complicated area, and it kind of warrants its own episode, really. But yeah,
I will say that as a man who has had sex with women, believe it or not, a lot has changed since I was like 17 till when I'm 35. That's, in my opinion, like, that is when porn, like, that is the journey that pornography has made in like availability. Because when I was 17, you really had to dig for it. But now that I'm 35, you can't not walk into it. You know what I mean? Like, you turn a corner and you're inside pornography.
Well, what effect has it had?
I feel like, you know, when I was younger, and this may be just because I was having sex with other 17-year-olds or whatever, but I feel like there's been, like, what you were saying about like the expectations put on women sexually. I feel like I have witnessed that from like the other side. Like, I have witnessed like the women that I've slept with being more, I don't know. I don't want to say like I feel like that, like the conversations that I've had with them around that sort of stuff, they seem to just be used to being treated a certain way that I think is what you see in porn.
Okay. So, okay. Yeah.
I don't want to get graphic on the show, it seems to me like that, like they're just like, yeah, whatever. That's a thing that happens.
Does that disturb you? Does it upset you? Do you notice it?
Well, I don't want to have any kind of thing happening in my sex life that somebody's just like, yeah, whatever. I guess that's a thing that happens. And so I try not to, you know, I don't want to do anything that anyone's not into, but it seems like, you know, what people are seeing in these movies is what they're then doing at home, and it's just become an expectation, like you said. It's just a ho-hum part of the job for women, I think, sometimes, to just accept those things. And you know, if it's not hurting anyone, whatever, but I don't personally want to do anything sexually that the person I'm with isn't also enjoying.
Yeah, but you're saying that it's kind of like an expectation that they should go along with it. They feel that, the women.
Yeah, they feel like they should just go along with it. Whether it's something they enjoy or not, they just kind of go like, whatever, this guy can do X, Y, or Z.
And I wonder how much that would be related to other guys they've slept with and the expectations they've had, and whether they felt they could say anything or not, you know. Because I think, especially with women, not even to do with sort of anything extreme or anything to do with pornography, there's always the danger of like being a prude. Do you know what I mean? It's like the double-edged sort of like slut shaming and also being a prude. So like, I think a lot of women kind of very much walk that line.
Well, enough of us. Let's dive into it. But before we do, just wanted to plug the book that Mark has coming out. It's out May 14th. It's called Everything Is Fucked. And this is a book about hope, mind you.
And we've linked to the details in the show notes where you can pre-order a copy.
Yeah, check it out. So we don't talk enough about sex on this show.
Okay.
And part of that is that Naz is Middle Eastern and her family objects. That's partially a joke. But also partially 100% okay. true. But I do want to talk because I've read some stuff you've written in the past about pornography, masturbation, etc.
Mm-hmm.
How long ago was that that you wrote? You wrote something about porn ruining our sex lives.
Ooh, long
while
time
ago, right? Like 2012? Like
yeah, 2012.
Okay. Are you still of that belief? Do you want to? Well, I guess before
we'll summarize it.
Yeah,
first.
Do you want to summarize it first?
So, like, I mean, there's a lot of debate whether porn addiction is a thing.
I feel like there's absolutely no debate.
Yeah.
From where I'm sitting.
Okay.
Anyone wants to debate that with me, you're an idiot.
Okay.
People
well,
are very addicted.
In the academic world, there's a lot of debate. But in the academic world, there's a lot of debate that, like, anything is an addiction. So porn addiction, it started to kind of get a lot of attention and press around then, like 2011, 2012. Basically, the idea is that it's not just about, you know, when people talk about too much porn, they talk about desensitization and people like getting into weird, quirky stuff that they don't, you know, they wouldn't normally watch. And that's definitely an important facet of it. But there was a guy who, I forget his name, but he wrote a lot of stuff back around that time, where he said that the actual, like, the neurophysiology of, like, dopamine and everything, like, that comes with sexual arousal, you can basically blow it out the same way you, like, can blow out an engine. You know, like, if you rev it too many times and too hard, it starts to, like, stop functioning well. And so, and I forget, I think he was, like, a biology professor somewhere. But anyway, he was talking about how there was a lot of data showing up that suddenly around this time, around 2010, tons of young men, like adolescent men in their 20s, when they're like basically peak horniness, were having
to put it scientifically.
Yeah. Like peak horniness and they're having erectile dysfunction at like record rates. They're having, you know, they're losing interest in dating. They're like just not having sex at all. And meanwhile, porn use is like going through the roof. So this is kind of a theory that he concocted. And he actually, a whole kind of movement, it's called the NoFap movement, developed around it. And it's, I think there was like a subreddit and you would go on, there's like a NoFap challenge of.
FAP meaning masturbate, right?
Yeah, FAP is
the noise. Like, I learned this a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Somebody explained that to me at one point.
Yeah, it's kind of like the nerdy, the internet dork word for masturbation. So yeah, this whole community of guys emerged. You know, you go onto this forum or whatever, and there were different challenges, like a 30-day challenge and stuff like that. And because it's like anything else in your body, like if you abstain from it, it kind of resets you.
Sure.
Neurologically.
So people are doing kind of like a whole 30, but with
masturbation and porn, and a lot of people just kind of cut it out completely. And so it's something that I experimented with. I was single at the time. And I've watched porn since I was like 10, and I never even considered like not watching it. So I stopped watching it for a while and then like stopped masturbating for a while. And yeah, it was, my sex life got better and, which was pretty cool. So I wrote some articles about it.
Okay. So do you still not watch pornography? I call it pornography, by the way. I don't like the word porn. It sounds gross to me.
I still do, on occasion. Not nearly as much as I used to. But also, I'm married now, so it's kind of like it's a different ballgame. It's funny. These days, porn serves a very different function in my life these days. Back when I was single, it was more like, well, I'm horny and I'm not dating anybody or like there's no girl around, so I'm going to jerk it and turn on some porn. These days, it's more just like it's a variety thing. You know, it's like a few times a month. It's like, yeah, be nice to look at like other hot girls.
Yeah, let's see what literally anyone but my wife is up to.
Yeah. I'm trying really hard to say this in a way that is not like demeaning or anything towards my wife, because like I love having sex with my wife. But at the end of the day, it's like I'm a dude and I like looking at naked girls. And it's like porn is a nice outlet for me to like kind of fulfill that sexual desire for variety in a way that is like completely socially acceptable and has no repercussions.
Completely socially acceptable.
Okay, well, socially acceptable.
I feel like there's
the
quite
people I hang out with.
Okay,
it's socially
in certain
acceptable.
Social circles.
Sure.
Yeah, because I feel like there's.
But
a lot
I
of people.
Feel like porn is such a. Anybody who's like doesn't accept. So I get the arguments that like certain types of porn, maybe there's like, you know, ethical gray areas around certain types of, like, I get those arguments. But the whole idea that porn in general is like not acceptable, I find so funny because there's not a place on this planet that doesn't watch copious amounts of it. There's like no point in history. Like, I think some of the earliest cave drawings in human history are porn. They're like literally little penises and like boobies. And I think it's just such a natural part of human existence. I think the issue with it today is to bring it back to the, you know, when more is less, is that when you take the scaling ability of the internet and that instant gratification and you combine it with pornography, it's you know, it leads to a lot of bad side effects.
So I want to know, I'm trying to figure out how to like talk about this from like a male, female, or masculine, feminine perspective. Like, obviously more men watch pornography, right?
Yeah.
I'd say that's pretty easily argued. Or not.
By a lot, yeah.
Yeah, right? So like...
Although more women are watching.
They're starting to.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. What do you think that's doing to like... you know, relationships? Like, what do you think? Like, I mean, it's only been 20 years since the internet made porn available 24/7. Sure. Right. And before that, you know, we had to go find it in the woods.
Yeah.
Which is a weird story that every guy I know has about finding porn somewhere before. Do you have that phenomena where like every guy that's over 30, like we used to just have to find porn?
Yeah.
Like,
it was like, yeah,
there'd be a rock in like a treehouse, and under that rock was like magazine clippings. It wasn't even a full magazine.
It was like searching for El Dorado. Like,
yeah,
it was. I remember I had a friend in grade school who went down his entire street and opened every mailbox, looking for a Playboy,
looking for that black magazine plastic.
He would find them and steal them, and it was like, oh my god, everybody, we gotta go to his house.
That,
you know?
Kid's a genius.
Yeah, pretty smart.
And that was Mark Zuckerberg. No,
yeah.
No. So, within the past 20 years, it's become beyond available.
Yes.
Right. It's you have to try not to see it now.
Yeah.
I'd argue. What has that done to how women and like men and women interact with each other?
So first of all, I think it's still so recent. I think the jury's kind of out on this. It's really hard to pinpoint stuff like this. It's really hard to pinpoint in studies. You know, did porn really cause this change in social behavior, or, you know, a bunch of other things happened at the same time? So,
all right, well, let's screw facts. What do you think?
What do I think? Well, I want to start with what we do know.
Okay.
In terms of like academic data. So first of all, the idea that porn like encourages sexual deviance is actually, it's backwards. I think it's places that are more exposed to pornography. Sexual violence actually, I believe, goes down. And I think it's just because
there's an outlet.
Yeah. Men who have really sick, twisted thoughts, they have an outlet for it. They don't need to like go do something awful. The other thing that has a very backwards kind of relationship with porn is that the more the areas of the world where porn is penetrated the most, pun totally intended.
Yeah. I liked it.
Is is actually men become less interested in sex.
Interesting.
And less interested in dating. So, for instance, and it's ironic. I mean, you picked on Nas's family, but actually the highest consumption of pornography in the world is in the Middle East. And
really?
Yeah. And it's interesting, Middle East and parts of Asia. And it's interesting because it's they're having a problem in a lot of these cultures, Japan, India, some of the Middle Eastern countries, where men just like, they just don't even want to date. They don't want to get married. They don't want to do anything. They watch porn and then they go about their lives.
Well, there was that guy in Japan a few years back who like married a pillow, right? Do you remember that?
I don't know if that's related, but...
Well, I just feel like that it has to be.
There's always some guy
he's
in
like,
Japan.
I've got my porn and I've got my pillow and I don't need any gals.
There's always some guy in Japan doing something really weird.
We're cutting that right out. We can't say that. As accurate as it might be.
As accurate. Yeah, we're going to get a lot of angry emails. I love Japan. Don't I mean that in the best way possible.
So... Okay, so that's our starting place, is that there are some common misconceptions about the advancement of pornography.
Yes.
And its resulting
yes.
Impact on society, and that is that more porn equals less sexual violence.
Probably. I mean, the evidence suggests that.
The evidence suggests that, and then...
And also more sexual indifference.
Yes, right. Like sexual apathy.
Yes.
Instead of sexual appetite. Okay, so that's our starting place. What do you think, you, Mark, what do you think it's done to just, like just, this show is based in Los Angeles and London, so let's look at, like, everyday American or even English relationships. What do you think it has done to sex and dating and even marriage for just everyday American or English citizens?
My guess is that it's probably made it worse. One of the things when I stopped watching pornography, one of the first things I noticed was that I felt a lot more present during sex. Because I think it just the act of watching it by its very nature is it's a very objectifying experience. So it's you learn to kind of associate sexual arousal and sexual pleasure with this kind of impersonal experience.
Sure. It's almost like voyeuristic.
Totally.
Right.
And it's, you know, there's a cheesy saying that the most sensitive sex organ is the brain. But it's true. It's like the difference between like, I guess, fun sex and like amazing sex.
Now we're getting to the good stuff.
Is that it is emotionally and psychologically stimulating as well. And to have that emotional and psychological stimulation, you have to be present with the other person. You have to be like fully engaged, fully aroused with what's in front of you, and not some kind of like nebulous conception.
And yeah, not even like fully aroused with what's in front of you so much as fully aroused with
who's
in front
of you. Yeah, that's,
right.
Yeah, that's a much better way of saying it. And I think just habitual porn use makes that more difficult.
Okay. So let's maybe like take this back and like get away from the idea of like porn, because maybe that's not even like a great angle. But like, how do we have better sex?
Yeah.
If you want to, like you're saying, being present, obviously that's great. But like, as people, like, what are we missing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I think it's...
I'm trying to find a good sex question here. What do you want to talk about sex? Naz says we need to talk about sex more.
I mean, what is good sex?
Yeah.
I think asking, like, what is good sex is kind of like asking what is a good conversation. It could be anything depending on the
anything
two...
but baseball.
True.
And that's the same answer for both questions.
Yeah. But it could be anything depending on the people involved. And it could be anything depending on where each individual is emotionally at the time. you know, kind of what they're looking for. Like sometimes it's like having very emotionally intense sensual sex is what's best at that moment. Other times it's like very rough, aggressive sex is what's best at that moment. It depends on the people and the circumstance. I think the way I think of it is that what you want to do is kind of expand your emotional palette of like where, what you're able to, how you're able to engage in intimacy. You know, some people only feel comfortable if the sex is like very kind of aggressive and impersonal. Other people only feel comfortable if it's like very slow and passionate and emotional. No matter what you do, if you do it all the time, it's going to get stale and boring. So my go-to advice would be to focus on kind of expanding that emotional palette of like what you can draw from, what experiences you're open to. And that requires some experimenting. Also requires communication, like making sure the other person's...
Safe word.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to go that far. But making sure the other person's down for it. Also communicating what you want specifically. So I think it's, I guess the two places that people go wrong the most is not, I guess not diversifying their sexual experience, and then also not communicating what they want explicitly.
So let's say you're entering into a new sexual relationship. What's the best way to bring that up?
You know, it's one of those things that a lot of people are scared to ask. Like they feel like it's just going to destroy the mood, but it actually, in my experience, it has the opposite effect. Well, one, because you find out what the other, so it's just something as like, what are you into? Do you like this? Do you want it? Like, do you want it hard and rough? Do you want to take it slow and sensual? You know, stuff
like
that.
It's like getting an eye exam where they're like, number one or number two?
Exactly. So,
that was not, I didn't, if anyone heard that as number one and number two, the way that I didn't mean it that way, but go on.
Well, it depends what you're into.
Sure. But I was not trying to make it gross.
Hey, baby,
anyway.
Are you into number one or number two?
Right.
So it's like asking that. I mean, two things. One is you're going to find out,
mm-hmm.
which is going to make the sex better. So even if it gets awkward for a few seconds, but it results in like better sex for as long as you're with that person, it's worth it. And then two, actually like communicating and being interested in the other person's desires and feelings is a turn on, you know, like,
yeah,
it's, that is a turn. Like everybody like wants somebody, like we're all just fundamentally extremely selfish. And so anybody who comes up to you and is like, what do you want? I'll give you anything you want. You're like, yeah. I like this person.
Hey,
you know,
sorry, what was your name again?
Yeah. We should be friends.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, so it's basically, it's like anything else in life. Tell people what you want and then listen when they tell you.
Exactly.
That's almost too easy.
It is too easy.
Okay. Well, anything else you want to talk about? Did we plug the book enough?
Buy my book.
Buy the book.
There's no sex in it.
There's
I
no
don't
sex.
Think there's
in
sex in it.
We got to sex that up.
Well, I do talk about sex robots.
Okay. Now I'm buying it.
Yeah. Yeah. And about how, you know, we just might not ever leave the house if once sex robots come around. We think porn's bad.
I almost never leave the house as is. I don't see what all the hubbub is.
All right, you're not going to get out of bed. Like that's the next step of removal. Is it's going to be Uber for like breakfast in bed.
What if they make sex robots that are the bed?
Oh my god.
Do you know what I mean? Like
this
a sex robed.
The sex, yeah.
Yeah.
This
like
is the future.
Tempur-Pedic adjustable sex robot bed.
You can just like a cock can just pop up anywhere.
Yeah. Like a whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
That's for sure going to upset some Middle Eastern sensibilities. Well, cool, man. I really appreciate you coming all the way over. Man. This was really fun. Anything else you want to say into a microphone?
The book is called Everything is Fucked, A Book About Hope, and comes out May 14th. Go check it out. And I'm going on a speaking tour.
Right.
And I will be in most of the major cities in U.S., Canada, and Australia. So check that out, too.
And where can we learn about that?
MarkManson.net/book-tour.
Okay.
And also just go to my Facebook page, which is Facebook/MarkManson.net. And yeah, book is everywhere.
Sweet.
So check it out.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for coming down.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
That was Dan talking to Mark Manson about sex and pornography. I'm Naz.
I am Dan. Our co-producers are Jonathan Blackwell and Sam Baker.
Share this show.
Share it.
Share this show.
Share this show.
Share this show. Speak to you next week.
Bye.